Acorns are dropping off my Chinese house. Two ducks in my spyglass, flowery as a mouse. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing.
Welcome to Yarns at Yin Hu, a podcast about the fiber arts and other post-apocalyptic skills. Episode 115, Le Petit Lapin, Sunday, March 10th, 2016. I'm your host, Sarah. You can find me on social media as Sarah Pomegranate. The Yarns at Yin Hu podcast has a Facebook page, and it's available on iTunes. Today's episode features the following segments: On the Porch, Sheep to Shawl, Ever-Expanding Skill Set, Off the Shelf, and Yarn Lover at Large. I'd like to extend a special thank you to Green Variety, who recently left an iTunes review. And I want to thank all the listeners who have been very patient while my podcast undergoes some woes with FeedBurner and iTunes. Currently, the only way to get episodes 114 and today's episode 115 is to listen online at yarns@yinhu.com. I have been working all week and will continue to work with Mac Highway, who provides the power and support for my website. And there are some issues with WordPress and my podcast feed getting to FeedBurner and to iTunes. So I'm very grateful to everyone who has let me know what their challenges have been in listening, and to those of you who have been very patient. I thought about waiting to podcast until everything was fixed, but I don't know how long that would be, and I really don't want to lose momentum or lose track of some of the content that I have. I'm particularly gratified with folks who have told me recently that they really do appreciate the quality of the content in this podcast, and it is my objective to have interesting, informative content delivered in a way that is easy to understand and suitable for folks who may be listening, who are experienced knitters, who are new to the fiber arts. And I even have some listeners who are not involved in the fiber arts at all, but like other aspects of the podcast. So thank you so much for your support and for saying that you enjoy the podcast. Before I continue with the regular segments, I'd like to give an All Birds update. In a previous podcast, I talked about purchasing All Birds wool runners. I have been wearing them for several weeks. I wore them for an incredibly long day standing on the gymnasium floor for our district health fair. They kept my feet dry and comfortable. Several people commented on how cool they were. My students especially were commending me for making sustainable purchases. And some of them asked for the website because they were going to check it out. There has been no pilling on the inside or the outside of this wool sneaker. They remain very comfortable. I prefer to wear them without socks. I think they're most comfortable and most effective at wicking away the moisture from your feet. And they keep my feet at a perfectly reasonable temperature, so my feet don't get cold and they don't get hot either. So far, I feel very satisfied with my purchase. I have also used these on some walks between 2 and 4 miles. and I'm enjoying them. One thing I didn't mention in my review in the last episode is how incredibly lightweight they are. I think these would be ideal for situations where you need to pack a pair of sneakers in a handbag, because while they take up a bit of room, they are extremely lightweight. So I would advise a look into them if you're seeking out an athletic shoe or a comfortable shoe that you need to take with you in case your day includes maybe unexpected walking and you just want to chuck on a pair of sneakers. On the porch. It has been spring break for me this past week with temperatures and weather that is exceedingly unspring-like, and it's left me a little bit restless and out of sorts. I was planning to use spring break to do a lot of outdoor work and just be outside a lot, but it wasn't just cold, it was bitter cold for quite a few days. So I kind of changed plans, and then some things sort of popped up and got in the way of plans that I had. I didn't really make as much progress on projects as I expected. But a few things I did work on were the Bonnie tank. Bonnie is a pattern from Tin Can Knits made in the UK. This is a pattern that's been around for a while, and the knitted tank has a beautiful lace insert at the neckline. It's very feminine, and knitters have made this with lace weight as well as fingering weight yarn. So I chose some lace weight yarn in a wool silk blend, and I did a swatch, but I made my swatch flat, and this pattern is worked in the round. So I only had really a vague idea of my gauge. And the pattern indicates that you can and should knit this tank top with quite a bit of negative ease, because especially the lace weight yarn creates a lot of stretch. So I began the pattern, which has stockinette kind of rolled hemline, and knit quite a few inches that was all rolling onto itself. I thought that the knitting was a bit too loose. I started thinking about whether or not I should knit this tank top in fingering weight yarn instead of lace weight yarn, and I ripped everything out. Over the course of this week, I restarted using a tubular cast on and knit 1 inch of 1x1 rib. And I also cast on for one size smaller than I had been doing. I decided I don't want an incredible amount of negative ease, but I didn't want a loose and saggy tank top either. So I think I cast on 8 fewer stitches, and I'm knitting the size medium. And now that I have the tubular cast on, an inch of rib at the bottom, and I'm just going around and around and around in stockinette, I feel quite pleased with how this is coming out so far. I have about 8 inches of the body, and I need to go to 13 or 14 inches before I start working on that lace insert. I think this will be a beautiful top for summer, and I did buy some cotton linen blend fabric to make a simple skirt to go with this top. I also did a bit of preparation for my paper cranes shawl. I will be knitting this in May and June. I might cast on before May, but the Swan's Island yarn that I ordered arrived, and it definitely was a situation where there was a great deal of crocking or indigo dye left on the yarn. So I decided I would soak the skeins and try to remove as much of this excess dye. It's excess dye, and it seems like the excess dye is in a powder form because it flakes or powders off onto your fingers as you're touching it and working with it. Just in the act of removing the tags from the yarn and untying the skeins, my fingers were blue. I noticed that these skeins were tied in only one place, which always makes me really nervous when I'm working with yarn. So I retied it in several spots so that in washing and drying this yarn, I wouldn't create a massive tangle. And then it took about 7 rinses in water. The first rinse, I used just a teeny bit of detergent, but then the rest of the rinses, I just rinsed in very warm water. And blue dye would fill the basin every time I did it. And there was even a little bit of blue on the 7th rinse, but I thought, okay, this is good enough. It's good enough to knit with. And then, of course, I will be rinsing or soaking the shawl one more time before I would be wearing it. I'm glad I did that. I have also wound this yarn, and when I wound the yarn, I let 1,050 yards run through my fingers as I wound it. And at the end of that winding process, there was just a very, very, very faint blue on my fingers. So the yarn is lovely. I really like the hand of it. I like the weight of it. It's a fingering weight yarn, but it's a light fingering. So 2 skeins yield over 1,000 yards. And I purchased this on a de-stash because I was curious about working with it and thought that might be a good way to try it. A lot of the folks who are de-stashing Swan's Island yarn talk about the fact that the reason they're getting rid of it is that they have dye all over their hands and they don't care for that and they don't care to work with it. There are some colorways of this yarn that don't have indigo dye, and I don't think they present quite a problem with crocking. But all of the colors, I think there are maybe 5 or 6 colors utilizing indigo dye, they do present a little bit of a challenge with the crocking. The other project I've been working on this week in terms of knitting is a pair of socks in really bright pink self-striping yarn, or maybe it's self-patterning yarn would be more appropriate. And I have turned the heel on the 2nd sock. I'm using the Fish Lips Kiss heel for the first time. I really like the fit of the 1st sock, and certainly using that Fish Lips Kiss heel on the 2nd sock was much easier and more intuitive when I was working it for the 2nd time. And now I'm just working on finishing up the leg. Sheep to Shawl. Yesterday was session 4 of the 2016 Sheep to Shawl class. It's nearly impossible for me to explain the impact and the just deep respect I have for the course itself and for the other participants in the course. It's the 2nd year that I've been enrolled in the Sheep to Shawl course, and things are the same but different. So there's the same pace to the class, the same overall objectives, But many of the activities that we're doing are a little bit different than they were last year. In preparation for yesterday's class, I did spend quite a bit of time this past week during my spring break working on spinning. I had carded about 4 ounces of an alpaca Jacob blend. I used very dark locks of Jacob fleece and some black alpaca that had been given to me last year by another participant in the course. And I decided that I really wanted to blend those two fibers together to make a very dark and very soft yarn. The other thing is that it's nearly impossible for me at this point in my spinning to work with the alpaca by itself because it's so slippery and has such a short staple length. I carded, hand carded the alpaca and Jacob fleece together in approximately a 50-50 blend. I was using a kitchen scale to weigh the amounts. However, when I spun the yarn and I did all of the initial spinning on a Jenkins drop spindle, a Turkish spindle, I used my Lark that weighs 19 grams, so it's a very lightweight spindle. And I was aiming for a fingering weight yarn, so I was spinning rather thin. As I was spinning, I do pull out neps and bumps of fiber, and I noticed that some of my Rolex had been carded more thoroughly than others. So in some places, there were bits of alpaca that weren't really carded into the Rolex very well, and chunks of that came out. So maybe in the end, it's more like a 55 Jacob 45 alpaca blend. Once I had all my singles, I used my Louette wheel to create a two-ply yarn. My method with spinning, because I do like a soft yet springy yarn, is to spin my singles with rather a low twist, and then to put quite a bit of twist into the ply. So I spun that up, and I was able to achieve 300 yards of, it's not a fingering weight yarn, it's more of a sport weight yarn, I feel, because it's 4.2 ounces, 300 yards. But it's beautiful, it's relatively consistent, I like the hand of it. I have not knit with this yarn yet, but maybe my next step will be to knit a swatch with that yarn. I think that using this very dark color will be a great background for using smaller bits of some of the hand-dyed yarn that we create. And so I'm spinning some gray, like a heathery gray, and also some white. The Jacob white fleece isn't a bright white, but it does wash very clean and it takes dye very well. So I think between that gray, heathery gray, and the white, I'll have some excellent yarn that's ready for dyeing. And I'll do that in smaller bits so that it's more of an accent on the dark background. Even though I completed the Sheep to Shawl course last year, I did report in an earlier podcast that I completely ripped out the garment that I created. I plan to re-knit that this summer, and then I plan a smaller design for the 2016 Sheep to Shawl course. I'm thinking about a cowl, and I'm also thinking about adding some vertical knitting details. I was listening to Greg and Joey recently on the Unraveling podcast talk about vertical knitting, in which you create a kind of a channel in your knitting as you knit flat or knit in the round. And then you use a crochet method to add a contrasting color vertically to your knitting. I'm thinking that might be an interesting technique to try and a great way to showcase some of the array of color that we achieve with our natural dyeing in the course. So my plan is to be a lot more organized with my dyeing experiments this year and to prepare small skeins of the gray and the white yarn to try in different dye baths. Last year I was dyeing fiber, I was dyeing some different blends of fiber, sometimes I was dyeing yarn. Sometimes in my mordanting process, I really got the yarn or the fiber too hot and it was a little bit felted or a little bit difficult to work with. So this time, understanding the pace and the trajectory of the class, I'm trying to be more purposeful and more have more of an intention to what I do, and definitely working on this spinning ahead of time is helping me with that. In May, the May session of the Sheep to Shawl course, we will begin the process of dyeing. So my goal is to have quite a bit of yarn prepared, maybe in 50 or 100 yard increments, so that everything is skeined up and I can keep track of the dyeing process. Yesterday, we also had session 3 of a watercolor class with an incredible Waldorf instructor at Green Meadow School named Brigitte. In session 1, we talked about warm colors. In session 2, cool colors. And in session 3, we were to devote ourselves to neutrals. But really, we talked about browns and how to achieve deep brown, rather adult colors. At the end of our session, Brigitte complimented us. "You've made such grown-up paintings." She explained that in Waldorf education, very young children are exposed primarily to warm colors, red, orange, yellow, pink. And then around adolescence, they start working more with cool or blue tones. Blue is associated with introspection, inner psychology, and there's some research to support this idea that it's difficult to see or understand blue tones until one has reached a certain level of maturity or one's psychology has progressed in a certain way. I even saw something online a few weeks ago about the fact that early humans didn't have any words for blue, and it is possible that they didn't really see the shades of blue that we see so easily and so frequently nowadays. Blue is such a popular color. But early humans may not have had that sort of sensitivity to blue. It's a pretty interesting concept to explore. In the final third session that we did yesterday, we talked about how to create brown tones and how other colors come forward from a ground that has grays and browns and other dark colors. And our technique of painting was, it was really unusual. It was intense and interesting. Brigitte had us sit opposite a partner, and we moved our watercolor paper forward until the paper touched. And so with two sheets of paper together we were creating one painting. The first step was to apply areas of color to the paper. And we could work with warm tones, cool tones, whatever we liked. We were to take turns painting, and we were not to speak. So my partner, Laura, cooperated with me one at a time. We put color onto the paper. We could put it onto the piece of paper directly in front of us. We could also reach over to put color on the paper that was further away from us. And we went back and forth and back and forth, adding color. And then when we were about 20 minutes into the process, Brigitte instructed us that we were now to start blending color so that we would create brown tones. And she talked about if there's yellow and you add purple, that will create a brown. If there's red and you add green, that will create a brown, and then orange and blue. And so we created these areas of darkness, and the spots of color began to shine through. It was very fascinating working with Laura. And then when we were done with the process, we walked around to see what all of the other pairs of students had been doing. And the paintings were so unbelievably different. It was incredible. So even though I'm sad that our watercolor session has concluded, I am excited when we go to the May session. All of the paintings will be dried and ready for us to take home. So I'm interested in seeing how they've dried and how they tell a little bit of a story, and maybe seeing if one or more of them might be framed to hang in my workspace or somewhere in our house. In the afternoon, we worked on knitting a little square of stockinette or garter stitch, and then one of our instructors, Sono, showed us how to turn it into a small rabbit. And we had a great time working on that. Last year, our initial project with our hand-spun yarn was to create a pouch or pocket of some kind. The instructions were given, and we were largely expected to complete this work on our own. And many participants in the class did not complete it. So this time, we all brought some yarn that we had worked on, and then we selected needles appropriate for the thickness of the yarn. And then Sono walked us through knitting a swatch so we would have the experience of working with our yarn. Some of the students in the class had plied yarn, and some were working with singles. And then she showed us how to create a little bunny. I will link in the show notes to the closest set of instructions I could find to what we did. We didn't have printed instructions. Sono just had some examples, and then she gave us directions verbally, and we helped each other as well. But I thought it would be interesting to link to something similar. There are a couple of different kinds of little bunny rabbits that you can make from a folded square. In one, it's a bunny sort of standing upright on its hind legs, and the corners of the square are used for the ears. The bunny that we made used two corners for the front legs and two corners for the back legs, and then we knitted little ears separately and stitched them on. It came out really cute, and I have used a photograph of that bunny for the cover for this week's episode. Thank you. ever-expanding skill set. This month, the month of April, for hashtag Power Pantry, I am cooking with leafy greens, and I hope you will cook along with me. Add recipes, ideas, and photos to the thread on Ravelry. There's a new thread each month. Folks share recipe ideas and photographs of things that they're cooking. And I was reminded by Yarnder Woman, Melinda, to just add a handful of leafy greens to lots of different things that you were cooking. So I have been doing that. I also made a spinach and ricotta pie in a homemade pie shell. That was really delicious. And one of the things I like about that is it's great to eat it hot when you first make it. And it's also excellent room temperature as a leftover. It's very high protein with ricotta, eggs, and I used some grated Parmesan cheese. The recipe I have was given to me by a former colleague and includes nearly a cup of mozzarella cheese as well as a whole bunch of Parmesan cheese. But if you use a really good quality, highly flavored like Parmigiano Reggiano, you don't need to use that much. I think I added maybe a third of a cup into the dish and it tastes cheesy and sharp and wonderful. I also use grated nutmeg whenever I put spinach or most other leafy greens into a dish. And I really like the way that balances with the sharpness and bitterness of the spinach. For the spinach ricotta pie, I did use frozen chopped spinach because when I was shopping, all of the fresh greens had been removed from the shelves. It was very late at night. But this week I've purchased some fresh greens and I'm very eager to try this evening a recipe from the recent issue of Taproot. Issue number 17 is titled Myth, and there are a whole bunch of really delicious looking recipes in there. The one I'm most eager to try is braised coconut spinach with black beans and lemon. There's grated ginger in this recipe. It's really all of the flavors that I love. So I'll be looking forward to trying that tonight. Off the shelf. April is National Poetry Month, and I often like to share a poem or two on this podcast. Today I have a poem called The Joins. It's written by Chana Bloch from the Southern Review in winter of 2014, and it takes as its topic kintsugi, the Japanese art of mending pottery with gold. Recently I've heard, a couple different podcasts, I don't remember the specifics, but there has been mention of Japanese mending with thread, with gold, and so I thought this would be a timely poem to share with you. The Joins. What's between us often seems flexible as the webbing between forefinger and thumb. Seems flexible, but it's not. What's between us is made of clay, like any cup on the shelf. It shatters easily. Repair becomes the task. We glue the wounded edges with tentative fingers. Scar tissue is visible history. The cup more precious to us because we saved it. In the art of kintsugi, a potter repairing a broken cup would sprinkle the resin with powdered gold. Sometimes the joins are so exquisite, they say the potter may have broken the cup just so he could mend it. Yarn lover at large. Over the next month or so, I have a few fiber-related trips planned. This coming weekend, April 16th and 17th, is the Steel City Fiber Festival. I have never attended this, but it's local to me in Allentown, Pennsylvania. And I'm thinking that on Saturday, I might head over there to check it out. Also, I will be facilitating a getaway for the Farm and Fiber Tour of Washington County, New York. There are 20 fabulous individuals joining me for a tour of farms and a mill. We're also having a fabulous three-course lunch with handmade cheeses at a farm. And that is going to be the weekend of April 22nd through the 24th. I have spent a lot of time over spring break making preparations and plans and contacting folks who will be participants in the retreat. So if you are joining us and you have any questions, please send me a message or an email to let me know. I can't wait to see all of you on April 22nd. For our fabulous communal dinner at the Christ the King Center in Greenwich, New York. Finally, I will be traveling to Maryland Sheep and Wool for the Saturday of the festival, the first Saturday in May. I plan to see some good fiber friends and hopefully meet some fans of the podcast as well. And I will be purchasing my first fleece at this festival from the Ross Farm. So plans are underway and I'm growing more and more excited about a fleece of my own and spending the summer working on processing and spinning that fleece. That is the Shackleton project that I set out for myself, and I think the rest of the explorers will be coming into port by the time I'm leaving the harbor. Nevertheless, I feel inspired, especially by seeing all of the really extreme undertakings of other knitters and spinners and working on their Shackleton projects. And I know that I will have the support of that group as I set out on this adventure.
Acorns are dropping off my Jenny's house. Two ducks in my spyglass, flowery as a mouse. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. Leaves her down like a lady, waiting for a naked man. River bends like an elbow, turning stones to sand. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed today's episode, I hope you will consider leaving a star rating or a review on iTunes, or liking the show's Facebook page, or joining the Yarns at Yinhu group on Ravelry. The music for the episode is Sweet, music and lyrics by Samuel St. Thomas, performed by Krista Long and Cesar Diaz. Eat well and stay strong as you hone your post-apocalyptic skill set this week.
Nature's a bouquet you hide till your face is mine. Jump on a river naked, hike a country mile. It's a subway nature thing. It's a subway nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing.